Good evening. My name is Wayne. Welcome to the second week of four questions I don't know if my pastor could answer. You know, as I was preparing this message at home, I've got lots of questions from my family. How many of you believe the earth is flat? A flat disc-like object with water surrounding the outer rim, and as you go further out, you will eventually fall down. Anyone? Anyone believe the earth is flat? No? We all know the earth is not flat. How do we know? Well, because we've seen photos from space, photos taken of the earth from space, and we see a sphere, we see a round object. And also from physical observations, from mathematical calculations, or from basic geometry, we understand that the earth is round, it's a sphere. But did you know, for thousands and thousands of years, humans actually believed the earth is flat? Because that is what we see with our eyes. That is what we observe. During the summer, I took my family on a road trip. On the road trip, we came to a part of the Prairies in Canada. Anyone's been to the Prairies? Yeah, I see some nodding heads. Do you know what is the Prairies? It's flat land, basically. It's flat land. This is the picture I took when I was driving. A little dangerous, I was driving. I got my wife to take the picture, of course. Sorry for the dirty windshield. There was lots of bugs. But as you can see, it's flat. And this is not completely flat already. There's like rolling hills on the distance. So if, and this is Highway 9, going from Calgary to Jumhella. We were going to the Dinosaur Museum. If you go to Saskatchewan, anyone been to Saskatchewan or Winnipeg? Oh yeah, I see some hands. Hey, I want to go there one day. Saskatchewan is where it's really, really flat. It's completely flat. And the road is straight. So basically, you got a horizon and a straight road. And that's what you get. And that is what we see. It's flat. How could we know the earth is not flat from observation? But when we see carefully, generations after generations, humans have tried to understand the environment that we live in. Careful observations, deliberate investigations, intentional analysis, and sometimes accidental discoveries. We have tried to make sense of all that is around us. From all that we can see with our eyes to everything we cannot see, from as mighty as volcanoes to tornadoes, and as tiny as atoms and neutrons, quarks and quantum, science is the understanding of everything physical. How things work, why things work, using empirical data, systematic analysis, repeatable patterns, we have come to understand medicine, our biology, many systems at work within our human body, and even the stars and the galaxies and the vast universe that surrounds us. We're in this series, four questions I don't know if my pastor could answer. Are there really only four questions? Of course not. But we can only dedicate 4 weeks to this series. Surely there are more questions that we can ask. But we've picked four. And hopefully, these four will inspire you to ask more questions, to strive to find the answers, questions that pushes us to ponder on faith and science, and ask some hard questions about what we believe in. Now, I'm so glad we have this series, because when I was growing up, these are the exact questions that I have in my head, and nobody could really adequately answer them. And one of these many questions, it's about dinosaurs. But before I get to the dinosaur story, I need to tell you another story. Like many of you, I grew up in the church. As far back as I can remember, my parents would bring my sister and I to church every Sunday. But unlike here in Richmond, going to church was not as easy as going from door to door. Mine was an hour journey of walking, taking the subway, what we call the MTR, and then going through the taxi. While growing up, I didn't give much thought to it. It was just the way it is. But as I look back now, I really appreciate my mom's persistency because it demonstrated the importance of attending church regularly. But as we moved here when I was 10 years old, the first Sunday when we were here in Richmond, we went to church. Going to church is just something we do every week, regardless. And you can probably imagine, as a kid, being in church all my life, I've heard all the Bible stories. Like, literally, all the Bible stories. Jesus casting out the evil spirits, he walking on water, calming the storms, Peter and his 153 fish, stories of Moses and the 10 plagues, the manna and the Jericho, stories of Samson and of Samuel, stories of Jonah and of Noah. You can name it all. I've heard it all and remembered it all. And that's me for the first 13 years of my life. Have you ever had those aha moments? Aha. Like Newton and his aha moment when the apple dropped on his head. We might have our aha moments when certain light bulb goes up in our head. I call it our awakening. My awakening was one ordinary day when I was in grade 8. Like always, a group of grade 10s would, during lunchtime, gather along the hallways and play card games. One particular card game is Big Two. Some of you know how to play Big Two. And if you know how to play Big Two, you would know that if you lose the game while still holding more than 10 cards, you've lost big time. And usually they're consequent to some kind of punishments. Now, this particular game, this group of kids, they were playing Big Two, and there's this one boy who lost the game with all 13 cards still in his hands. So the one who won, the kid who won the game, decided he needs to really punish this kid, and somehow concluded that the punishment was to give him a wedgie. Do you know what a wedgie is? Parents, do you know what a wedgie is? Now, this is no ordinary wedgie. This guy pulled so hard with such force, he was basically dragging this poor guy along the hallway and ultimately ripped the entire thing out from his pants. Ouch. This poor guy was crying in tears of humiliation. I was standing at the back watching the entire thing unfold, and a loud and clear voice came to my mind. Are these the people who I want to hang out with? Are these the kids, the kind of people I want to even be associated with? It goes against every value I was brought up with. It goes against everything I learned from church and from all the stories I've heard. And all these questions, like tsunami waves, smashed through my head. And one question spoke the loudest. What does going to church every week has anything to do with the rest of my life? If it has absolutely nothing to do with it, then I'm just wasting my time, wasting my energy every Sunday morning, waking up so early, I could have easily slept in. But if going to church has meaning with the rest of my life, if attending church, if learning all these stories about this Jesus guy, if this God and this Christian faith is supposed to have meaning and impact to the rest of the days of my week, then I better seriously find out what those meanings are. Now, thank God I made a wise choice that day. And this aha moment defined the person I am today. I've made it my life's mission to find meaning, relevance, points of impact between faith and life. God's word is truth. Every word in this Bible speaks truth into all circumstances in life. when was your aha moment? Have you had that moment when you realize this God is someone who makes sense in your life? Not only does God make sense, but having him in your life makes sense, and you're not sure how it can be otherwise. And hopefully this series inspires you in your search for that aha moment. Now, going back to the dinosaurs, have you ever wondered where a dinosaur fits in the creation story? This six-day creation narrative mentioned nothing about dinosaurs. With all the fossils discovered throughout the entire world, the existence of dinosaur in prehistoric life is undeniable. You cannot deny it. There's even museum built around it, around the world. But there seems to be a large time discrepancy between the scientific findings from archaeologists and paleontologists regarding fossil records and the genealogy of Adam and Eve. How does those two things come together? Which one is correct? Which do I trust more? Which do I believe? Now, dinosaurs is only one of the many questions I have regarding science and evolution and creation. What about the evolution of man? The Ice Age, the glaciers, Pangaea and the tectonic plates, Megalodon, Ogopogo, Loch Ness monsters. Does it seem like creation story from the scientific perspective differs from the biblical narrative? Are they in opposing views? Do I have to choose one over the other? Is one right and the other one wrong? Can they both be right? But if they're both right, how can we make sense of the differences? Now, normally, a pastor would go to the book of Genesis and unlock some biblical truth. But this series, we are looking at science. The question we're asking is there any scientific evidence of the creation of the universe? The key word here is scientific. Okay, we must approach this quest from a scientific perspective, not theological, not philosophical, but scientific. Now, for hundreds and thousands of years, humans have tried to understand and make sense of everything that surrounds us. Through the process, we've come to know the universe is governed by various laws of physics, like gravity, electromagnetism, and nuclear forces. Rules in chemistry, like atomic weights, orbitals, and bonds. And then mathematical constants, like the speed of light, or the strength of gravity, or the mass of electrons. Now, without this, the world, even the universe, would not exist. However, scientists have also asked, how much margin of error can there be with these constants or forces? How much margin of error can there be? It's like baking a cake. The recipe calls for 3 eggs in the recipe, in this cake, but you accidentally added 4 eggs. Do you still get a cake? Yeah, I think so. Maybe a bit more dense, less fluffy, but likely you still get a cake. Or cooking. You're supposed to add 2 teaspoons of soy sauce and 3 tablespoons of sugar. But you got the spoons mixed up. You added 2 tablespoons of soy sauce and 3 teaspoons of sugar. Now, would the dish still taste good? Anyone cooks? Those who cooks will know, no. You get those 2 things mixed up, it's not gonna taste good. It's gonna be very, very salty. So scientists want to find this out. Can the universe, can life still exist if certain things are not exactly the way they are now? So let's go into a little science history. Long, long ago, it's not that long ago, but long ago, in the 1600s and the 1700s, scientists like Isaac Newton, Kepler, Galileo, began discovering that the universe runs on laws, like a finely tuned clock running with elegance and precision. In the early 1900s, Einstein gave us his theory of general relativity, describing how space and time are woven together. He thought the universe is static, so he added what he called the cosmological constant in his calculation to keep the universe steady. But then in 1929, Edward Hubble discovered the universe is actually expanding rather than what Einstein believed as static. And then years later, actually not too long, it's only in the 1990s, scientists like Frank Tipler and Steven Weinberg, they found out that the universe is not only expanding, but the expansion is accelerating. Now, what's more is that they noticed something strange. Those numbers we've come to know as fundamental constants, those numbers that doesn't change, seemed almost impossibly precise. Numbers such as the strength of gravity, the charge of the electron, and expansion rate of the universe. Now, if any of these numbers are not as precise as they are, or if the margin of error is greater than what it is now, life would not exist at all. So let's take a deeper look at this. Gravity, we all know gravity. Gravity is the weakest of all four fundamental forces. So do you know what are the four fundamental forces? Science lessons here. There's gravity, electromagnetism, and then there's two kinds of nuclear forces. One is called a strong nuclear force, one is called a weak nuclear force. The strong nuclear force is the force that holds protons, neutrons together in the nuclei. Great, so you're probably like, whoosh. It's okay, you'll get there one day. Weak nuclear forces are the radioactive decay or the nuclear fusion in the sun. Those are the two nuclear forces. Now, gravity is the weakest of all the four, but it also governs stars and galaxies and the large-scale structure of the cosmos. Now, when we talk about gravity, it's not simply the force that holds us down on the Earth. That is gravity, but that's not the only gravitational force. Think about it this way. If everything on Earth is experiencing the same gravitational force, no matter the size or scale of the object, then at a microscopic level, why won't all the electrons within an atom also get pulled down together and lump as one, but still be able to free spinning? We know that electron spins around the nuclei. Some of you are like science lessons here. So imagine this. If I pour a bowl of marbles into a glass jar, what would happen? It all goes down and the marbles would be touching each other. But we know that if, now imagine the marbles are atoms. We know that atom is made up of a nuclei, which consists of protons and neutrons, and there are electrons spinning around, different numbers of electrons spinning around that nuclei. That's an atom, the smallest possible, not the possible, but the smallest single thing. Now, if gravity pulls on everything together, why doesn't all the atoms clump together and the electrons have no space to move? But we still have electrons spinning around freely in space. How is that possible? The reason is because there's another force at play, and that is called the electromagnetic force. What is electromagnetic force? Now, like I said, all physical things are made up of atoms. Each atom composed of protons, neutrons, and electrons. The electron charge determines how atoms are held together. And this is basic chemistry. Okay. Now, what happens if the electron charge is slightly larger? Atoms would repel each other, and the chemistry will make it unstable. Molecules essential for life, like water and DNA, couldn't form. What happens if the electron charge is slightly smaller than what it is now? All the atoms, like I said, would come together by the force of the gravity. Electrons would drift away, and things would become unstable. There is a very precise balance between the ratio of that electromagnetic force to gravity. The relative strength is enormously lopsided. What I mean by that is electromagnetic force is about 10 to the power of 36 times stronger than gravity between two protons. And that is one with 36 zeros. And the relative strength is enormously lopsided also. That means, although there is the same gravitational pull upon everything, because the electromagnetic force between two protons is 10 to the power of 26 newtons, and the gravitational force between two protons is about 10 to the 62 newtons, a ratio of 10 to the power of 36, the electromagnetic force is enough to repel the gravitational force at a molecular level and gives enough freedom of movement for the electrons to spin as they do. Very scientific here, right? So basically, if the balance between the electromagnetic force and the gravitational force is slightly off, things will not work. Okay, let's keep going. Let's look at something else. It's gonna get even more deeper. Earlier I mentioned something called the cosmological constant. This is one thing that scientists are still not understanding. Okay, in Einstein's equation of general relativity, which describe how gravity shapes the universe, the cosmological constant is a term that represents the energy density of empty space, or what we call dark energy. Simply put, it measures how much push or stretch the fabric of space itself has. And let's skip over some of the history behind it. From this number, written as the number lambda. Let's go to the next slide. The problem with this cosmological constant, the problem is that the theoretical physics and the actual observations do not match. What I mean by that, okay, if you do theoretical physics, meaning just straight from mathematical calculations, in quantum physics, the empty space should be full of energy. The calculation predicts an energy density out of about 10 to the power of 120 times larger than what we observe in real space. So this mismatch in theory and in observation is what baffles scientists, because they cannot fully understand why there is that difference. They thought the calculation would match from what they observe, but it doesn't match. And this observed value is incredibly tiny. Basically, if this constant is off by that much, 10 to the power of 120, if it's off by just a little bit, the universe would not exist. If it is slightly bigger, what would happen? The universe would have expanded too fast, meaning galaxies and space and planets would not have enough time to form. Now, if it is slightly smaller, or if this constant is negative, 3 seconds after the Big Bang happened, there would be the big crunch. Big Bang would happen, but then things would collapse back. So this constant, it is so tiny. Initially, Einstein thought it's almost zero. And all the physicists and all the cosmologists thought it is zero. But it is not zero. It is just so tiny and so finite, yet it is not zero. But if this constant is off by a little bit, things would not have worked. Okay. Stephen Hawking basically said this. If the rate of the expansion 1 second after Big Bang had been smaller by even one part in the 100,000 million, the universe would have re-collapsed before it ever reached its present state of expression. Scientists, physicists, cosmologists, astronomers, whether they are atheist or agnostic or theist, they are admitting that the universe looked designed. There's a whole bunch of scientists with quotes. Now, Fred Hoyle, he said, a common sense interpretation of the facts suggests that a super intellect has monkeyed with physics as well as with chemistry and biology. Another astronomer by the name George Greenstein, in his book, he writes, as we survey all the evidence through a thought intensely arises that some supernatural agency must be involved. Is it possible that suddenly, without intending to, we have stumbled upon scientific proof of the existence of a supreme being? Paul Davis writes, he's a physicist, the impression of design is overwhelming. The laws of physics seem themselves to be the product of exceedingly ingenious design. The universe, in some sense, must have known we are coming. And one more. His name is Alan Sadich. In one interview, he said this, I find it quite improbable that such order came out of chaos. There has to be some organizing principle. God, to me, is a mystery, but is the explanation for the miracles of existence, why there is something rather than nothing. Now, there are still so much more about the universe that we do not understand. Not only about that cosmological constant, but even more mysteries about dark energy, the black hole and wormholes, quarks and dark matters. And if you watch Big Bang Theory or Young Sheldon, string theory. Now, we are out of time and cannot go into string theory, but in essence, it is trying to explain the universe with another concept. But what can we take away from all these? What can we take away? For one thing, well, there is still so much we don't know. So much about the universe, our oceans, our human bodies, so much that we don't know. And if any of us, the moment that we claim we know it all, is when you announce your ignorance. And this leads to my second point. For those of you still in school, I would highly encourage you, study hard in school. It is through our mind and knowledge that we embrace a fuller understanding of God and our faith in Him. Particularly for those who enjoy doing science, strive in whatever field you feel attracted to. Science expands our understanding of God and His creation. The more we discover, the more we uncover, the more we marvel at the complexity, the ingenuity, the wisdom of God. Even for people who do not have a faith background, after coming to their understanding of the universe, the intricacy and the complexity of the design, the meticulous nature of everything at play to create life, to sustain life, even for them, they question the likelihood of this super intelligent supreme being. It takes more faith to make a claim that life and universe happens by chance than a creator who designed it with purpose. And in all honesty, we don't need a PhD degree to know this. King David, over 3,000 years ago, without any knowledge of the cosmic radiation, of the Big Bang, or the understanding of gravity, wrote in his psalm, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours out speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words, whose voice is not heard. Their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. And at about 1,000 years later, the Apostle Paul wrote in one of his letters, echoing the same thing. In Romans 1:19, he says, "For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived, and ever since the creation of the world, in the things that have been made, so they are without excuse." Have you ever seen the night sky? One so beautiful, so wonderful that you can see with your eyes. I took this picture last week when I was camping in Evans Lake. This picture doesn't quite do it justice. It only captures a glimpse of what I saw with my eyes. An entire sea of stars from horizon to horizon. The entire sky was covered with sparkling dust, glimmering, glistening. And with your naked eye, you can see the Milky Way. Maybe when we listen closely enough, we can hear what the stars are saying. "O Lord, our God, how majestic is your name in all the earth. O Lord, our God, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens. And when I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moons and the stars, which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him? And the son of man that you care for him?" Have you ever asked that question? Does God care about me? The God who created the universe, this ever-expanding universe, so vast beyond what we can even begin to imagine, this God, so smart, created all the different kinds of animals and creatures, weird and unique looking. And this God who is so powerful, that natural order and constants and laws are mere expressions of his will. This God cares for and is mindful of me. God loves each one of us. Now, coming back to dinosaurs. Undoubtedly, dinosaurs existed millions and millions of years ago. And surely the Bible doesn't talk about it because the word was not even invented. The word dinosaur was invented in 1842 by this guy named Sir Richard Owens from Greek words. But even when the Bible didn't explicitly mention anything about them, does it not mean we have to deny their existence? Contrary, can we expand our scope of understanding and comprehension? Can we broaden the plausibility and not be limited by our finite imagination? Can you comprehend a God who loves you so much that he spent millions of years preparing a place for us to live and enjoy? Can you comprehend a God who loves us so much that he made the universe just so we can lift up our eyes at night and see the wonders of the stars? And as we walk out these doors tonight, remember these words. The God who created the universe loves and cares for you. The God who created the universe loves and cares for me. Let's bow down in a word of prayer. Jesus, God, you are marvelous beyond our imagination and our comprehension. Your wisdom and your power display through the heavens and the stars in the creation is beyond what we can fully understand. And if we can really totally understand you, God, you are too small. And I know my God is much bigger than how I can fully comprehend. And you are worthy of my praise. Because even with all this power, with all this wisdom, you chose to love and care for me. Thank you. Thank you. In Jesus' name we pray.